Hello and welcome to this week's No Nay Never podcast. And I'm your host this week, George Poole, and I am joined by the illustrious Tom Whittaker. How are you doing, Tom?
Hey, George. Yeah, not so bad. Thank you. Nice to be back with you. It's just a shame we couldn't be meeting after a better result. That's the only problem.
Yeah, we've really done this the wrong way, haven't we? We had three or four games of, you know, decent results, really good performances, and then the one, let's say, performance that's gone off the rails a bit, we're meeting to record the podcast. But not to worry, we've improved a long way since we last did a podcast, so I think there's still plenty of positives to talk about. And to start with a positive, we're going to start our recap with a look back at the Brighton game. So Tom, going into Brighton, you know, it's middle of February. We've played Watford, United, got two decent draws, but then we've had maybe a narrow loss to Liverpool where we ended up going down 1-0 at that one. What were your thoughts going into the Brighton game? And I presume at that point you were like many of us, just thinking, dead and buried, let's just see how this rest of the season goes.
Yeah, I think for me, it's a ground where we've got a good record, so I was hoping we could go there and get something, but probably wasn't expecting us to play as well as we did and get the result we did. Obviously, the storm and everything, it was a bit of a grim day to play. I don't know whether that helped us a bit. But I mean, really, it goes to say anything about whether we were just a better team on the day. It was the most complete performance of the season, I think. We attacked really well. We defended really well. Nullified a team that's been going really well in the league. Scored two fantastic goals. One slightly less fantastic goal, but it was really good for Weghorst and Brownhill to get on the score sheet. Tremendous goal by Lennon as well. We got the goals at good times. We controlled the game really from start to finish. And yeah, it was a performance that really certainly gave me a bit of hope that, you know, we've had games this season where we've played well. We've got some creditable draws. We've not quite got the wins over the line. And obviously that's been our big problem this season. But to win in that manner and to get the ball rolling on a good week, it was fantastic, really encouraging, and obviously it led nicely into the next game then on the Wednesday.
Certainly, and it was so brilliant to see. I was in Chester that week, and I remember we were driving between going for a walk for my friend's birthday and going to a bouldering centre. So we were driving on the motorway, and I was watching the stream on my phone. And yeah, 20 minutes into the game, suddenly Wout Weghorst absolutely nails a thunder blaster into the back of the net, and I think my screaming almost got the car changing lanes. But it was a brilliant finish by Weghorst, wasn't it? And it, you know, it was so good to see him get off the mark, because his performances had deserved that first goal.
Yeah, for sure. I think you can see that he's got attributes that Wood didn't, certainly when he was playing that sort of classic number 9 centre forward role. It's benefited the team. I think the midfield looks better with him playing. His link-up play is really good. Obviously, he dropped back to goal and got the assist for Josh Brownhill's goal. And the finish, I think, to be fair to the guy, he's not, obviously, it's his only goal so far, but he's not had a lot of brilliant service in and around the 18-yard box. But, you know, Roberts did really well. Lovely little cutback for him. And it's a sumptuous finish. Very much reminiscent of the goal that Ashley Barnes scored. I think his first one would be West Ham 3-0 a few years ago. Just that little cutback from the edge. Caught it sweet as a nut. And the keeper hadn't even moved by the time it was in the back of the net. Fantastic goal.
Yeah, certainly. There's some moments in recent Burnley history where you just see the peak of a strike partnership. I remember, you know, obviously Vings back in the day, there was plenty of games where you thought, wow, that's them two pinging as they should. And that West Ham game was probably the height of the Barnes and Chris Wood strike partnership, where we seem to be turning every team over, and these two traditional strikers, as the pundits like to call them, thinking they were being nice, these two strikers, they couldn't deal with them. So yeah, that goal of Weghorst did really remind me of that goal from Barnes down at West Ham back in the day. And obviously going into the week after the Brighton game, we had Tottenham at home. And before we go on to talk about the result, how good was the atmosphere going into that, Tom? Just when you were going to the ground, it just felt there was this groundswell of the fans really getting behind the players and ready to make it one of those rip-roaring nights at Turf.
Yeah, the win at Brighton and particularly the performance, I think, gave so much belief around the club, around the team, around the fans, and that really carried into that game against Tottenham. You know, it's one of those teams, you know, that they've always got a bit of, you know, a bit of a soft underbelly. Obviously, they've got some great players, but well, I think the adjective Spursy, and so it proved, you know, you've always got a sense when you're playing Tottenham that we've got a chance here. If we, you know, if we can keep it tight at the back, we can nick a goal. You never know what kind of Tottenham team's going to turn up. We're a bit like Arsenal in that sense. You always see what you can get at them. And I think we really needed, you know, that result for two reasons. One, it's a statement win. You know, we've dropped points against a lot of the teams that are around us in the back of the relegation zone. So we needed 3 points against a team who were pushing at the top of the table, I think, just to redress a bit of that balance. And also, to, like I say, the belief, the momentum. And then the other thing was, in terms of speaking about momentum, it's back-to-back wins, which obviously we've not had all season. It's only our third win of the season. So not just in terms of what that does for you, in terms of points, you know, to get 6 points in a week, or obviously seven, as it turned out, was a massive boost. But yeah, again, confidence, momentum, the belief that we can turn these performances into 3 points, it was huge, huge night for all those reasons. And that, yeah, that was, yeah, the best I felt coming off a Burnley game in a long time.
Yeah, it was magic. And I've just been doing a little read up of the match reports before we came on air today. And that win against Tottenham was actually only our first back-to-back Premier League win in 13 months. I mean, it just goes to show how much we needed that, to say the least. But it was a really spirited performance, I thought. Maybe first half, it was a very scrappy game. There wasn't too much in it. But I thought second half, we really stepped it up. And it was clear that, I think it came out after the game, that Dice just basically said to them all the time, you know, just play with that confidence. You know, you deserve to be here. Play the ball on the ground. And, you know, we really did that in the second half. And it was a brilliant cross and a brilliant cross by Brownhill, and then a brilliant finish by Ben Mee with his head. And he doesn't score all too many goals, Tom, but he comes up with big goals, doesn't he, from time to time.
Yeah, I remember one at Stamford Bridge a few years back. That was the infamous Mourinho goals on Sunday game, wasn't it? So, yeah, I think he scored at Man City as well. So it's not a bad record against the top six for a centre-half. Fantastic header. I said on Twitter, it's a proper Burnley goal. You know, like how many times in the last few years have we had a 1-0 win where we keep it tight in the first half, we get a goal from a set piece in front of the Jimmy Mack in the second half, and we sit on that and teams can't break us down. And yeah, textbook, absolute classic Burnley win. If we can get another 3 or 4 of them under our belts before the end of the season, then we will have a chance. And as you say, great header from Ben Mee. I think it was his 250th Premier League appearance for him, something like that, or a 350th event, something like that. It was a landmark appearance for him anyway. So brilliant for him to get a goal. And then obviously we'll probably talk about him a little bit later on as well when we do a more general overview, but Brownhill starting to contribute goals and assists, and it was a fantastic ball in, exactly the kind of delivery you want, with Westwood out, he'd normally be the kind of the bloke who was taking their free kick. So thought for Brownhill to step up, put that great ball in, and then obviously we got the finish as well, so that was fantastic. And like you say, the ground was rocking. It just felt brilliant, didn't it? Brilliant win, absolutely great night.
Yeah, it was magic. It really was magic walking off the ground that night. You just thought, wow, all of a sudden in the space of 4 days, we'd had more wins in the space of 4 days than we'd had in the previous 9 months. And you just thought all of a sudden, you know, we can actually do this. The impossible dream is on here. I mean, for years I've watched the brilliant, there's a brilliant video on YouTube if you type in the impossible dream Burnley. And it's, I think it's a match report from I think it might have been Northwest tonight when we almost did the impossible and turned Tottenham over in the Carling Cup in 2009. It wasn't to be that night, but there's a brilliant video on YouTube. You should check that out. But it almost seems this season that it is the impossible dream once again to stay up. I mean, if you look at the position we're in, there's a reason why the fans are rightfully chanting the theme of the Great Escape nowadays on away days, because it really did seem like we were doomed, even for the most optimistic of us. I think I'd even started to lose faith towards the end. I mean, after we didn't beat Watford, for example, that was you felt at the time, wow, that's the season definer, really. And we're gonna rue that day. But after the Tottenham game, things started to seem on the up. So obviously we're going to talk about the Palace game. Now we're going into the Palace game. You suddenly got this sort of expectation on you that, you know, we could go there and take a good result. So, Tom, it was good to see you before the game, obviously, and I'll mention that later for all the people who got involved with a photo project. But the game itself, it was a disappointing start, wasn't it? To see Palace score in the first 10 minutes, you think, oh, that's not the way to start a game where you're looking to build the momentum and carry on that good run of form.
Yeah, for sure. I think the word that you used there, expectation, is a good one. Because I think we've seen with the last two results, not quite, obviously hitting the heights, the performance is not quite as good. It's probably a bit of a realisation that, you know, just by winning a couple of games, we're not there yet. We've still got a lot of work to do. And we're not going to be turning out nines and tens every week. You know, it's difficult in this league. You're playing good teams with good players. And that did hit home on Saturday. You know, Palace are a well-coached team. They're going all right this season. And the two wingers, we always struggle to deal with their kind of speed down the flanks. I think Zahara, obviously, always a really difficult opponent. And Elise was the main man in that first half. Peter's been playing really well, and I felt sorry for him because Elise had him on territory, didn't he, in that first half. Twisting him inside and out. I didn't really know which how to deal with him, whether to show him inside or show him outside. And obviously, it was showing him outside that cost us that goal. Good ball in. Schlupp's just got in there, little toe poke. And like you say, I think there was almost an expectation that we were going to go there and get something. And then when that goal goes in, he's suddenly reassessing the whole season. So it was a bit of a shock to the system. But obviously, it didn't turn out too badly in the end.
No, it didn't. And you're right. Elise did really have Eric Peters on toast for breakfast for that Palace goal. I mean, he shredded him apart on that wing. And you just thought from minute one, I thought, wow, this kid looks special. And so it turned out. But viewers, listeners, it's a special moment in the night. We're welcoming Natalie Bromley to the podcast. And Natalie, how are you doing? I guess you've had a busy day at work.
I've come to reclaim my show. What's going on?
Yeah,
you've just got off without me.
Tell us how you're doing. And tell
I'm
us,
all right, thank you.
What were your thoughts going into the Palace game? You know, we'd had two back-to-back wins for the first time in 13 months, and spirits were high, weren't they?
Yeah, they really were. And actually, it was kind of annoying from our perspective, because we'd kind of all got ourselves relatively comfortable with the fact that relegation was on the horizon. And we were like, we'd made peace with it. We'd had a good run. We knew that we were in safe hands as a business. And we would come to it. And then all of a sudden, the Clarets do what the Clarets do best and give us all a little bit of hope, which was quite worrying, really. But yeah, and even though it wasn't another win, it wasn't a third win on the bounce, I've got to say, I think a point away at Palace was a really good, any point away from home, I think is a really good point. So I actually came away from Palace equally as buzzing as I was. It's a shame it got deflated a little bit by last night's performance. I have no idea what you've been talking about in my absence, so I might be covering duplicated ground here. But yeah, no, Palace was good and it was a good point in the end.
It was a good day. I mean, maybe too good for some, Tom, because going into the second half, we were still at the bar by the time we hear this cheer from the Burnley end. Heaven forbid we'd missed a goal. I mean, it was
you
a very...
both missed it.
I missed it. So I'm asking Tom what happened at the goal right now, because Tom, we were down at the bar. We didn't realise the second half had kicked off, and all of a sudden we're running around asking who's the goal gone for? Who's it gone for? But thankfully, it went to us, didn't it, Tom?
Thankfully, yeah, I've got a bit more self-control than George, so I was able to resist the lure of the half-time bar.
Well done, Tom.
£5 in Salzburg didn't appeal, to be honest with me. So yeah.
£5 pints or £9?
£5, I think. Too much, that's... anyway, for a pint of Carlsberg, whatever it was. Not quite £9, mate.
I've been working in Manchester for too long, because that feels relatively reasonable, to be honest. So sorry. Well, yeah, no, you were self-disciplined though. See, listen to this, George.
Yeah,
I'm self-disciplined.
Learn a lesson, because it was not a spectacular goal, but you know that the for an away game, that's what you travel for into those moments when the goal goes in. Just hopeful ball down from Roberts, lovely little flick from Rodriguez. Lennon obviously in superb form at the minute. I'm sure we'll talk about him a bit more as well. Just does what every classic winger does, gets to the byline, cuts it back, puts it into an area that's difficult to defend. And Luka Milivojevic very helpfully did the rest for us, slid in and tapped it home. And he didn't really see it coming, especially the first half performance wasn't great. So to get to be back on level terms that quickly with the performance level not quite being up to the standards of the previous week, it was very encouraging, and obviously gave us a very solid base for the rest of that game.
No, certainly. And Natalie, Tom's mentioned three big names there, I think, who are involved in that goal. Roberts, Lennon, Rodriguez. How much of a difference have those three individuals made to this team over the past month? Because it's like night and day, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. And we knew in January that something needed to change. We knew that the squad was very stale. It was the tactics were very stale. I think Dyche's management abilities were looking pretty stale. And we all thought that that would come in the transfer window in terms of volume, that we were going to get new players in. Inadvertently, that did actually happen. I think Newcastle took Chris Wood from us with the distinct aim to get us relegated and to significantly weaken us. What they ended up doing is actually strengthening us, because we replaced him with a far better player. Fair enough, we didn't get the numbers in. But I just think a lot of things in January change, bringing Weghorst in and just tightening up that big gap between central midfield and the front line. The pain, I think, that some of the players felt with Wood walking out, and a realisation that actually we were in a lot of doo-doo this season, and actually this was different. This wasn't just a case of us having to fight for our Premier League survival like we normally do. We were actually going to have to, this is serious. We think we're going down. Aaron Lennon was probably the big, and I think we all knew that Roberts was going to be like, he should be right back. And I think he is our first choice right back now. I think Lennon's probably the biggest surprise. I think we were all pretty pleased when he came back. I think most of us would have happily offered him a new deal. But for him to turn in the performances that he has been doing recently, again, Tuesday night for me at home against Leicester, he was one of the shining points for me, an otherwise quite miserable night. So, I think unexpected, but how can you be anything other than delighted for Aaron Lennon? He's such a fantastic character, and you're willing him to do well, right? I think that's where we all feel.
Totally. And there's been a brilliant piece in, I think it was in the Lancashire Telegraph in the past week. Where
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's a really good read. It's basically just a write-up of Dyche's comments from a recent press conference. I believe it was after the Palace game, just where he talked about when Lennon came back to the club, well, started negotiating with Dyche and the owners again about coming back. He basically said that he didn't feel like he'd left everything on the pitch due to one reason or another when he was with us in his first spell. And he just felt he had something to prove again. And Dyche has said that he's talked to Lennon and just got him running at goal again. And you can see there's a massive change in the way he's playing. He's actually turning towards goal, running at his fullback, yeah, and going forward. And like Tom said earlier, you know, we got a lot of luck for that equaliser at Palace, but a lot of it comes from Lennon actually just going after a man, seeing what chances he can create, and putting a ball in the box, because that's all you can do really as a winger. And yeah, the luck's gone his way. So yeah, it's brilliant to see Lennon at the top of his game again. And it was on the commentary for the Leicester game, even the commentary team there were saying what a difference it makes with Lennon looking like his best again. So no, I really did enjoy watching Lennon at Palace, and there was many things to enjoy at Palace, weren't there, Tom? And I remember seeing your tweet after the game about just the away end in general. The fans were brilliant, weren't they? It was a really good day out, despite not quite getting the win.
Yeah, really good. I think that, you know, that week prior to the Leicester game has really engendered like a lot of confidence, a real feel-good factor. And I think the fans that were there at Crystal Palace really wanted to reflect what we've been getting on the pitch in the previous two games. Encouraging. It's one of them. You know, sometimes you get the away ends where the songs are all about, you know, your rivals or, you know, the opposition. It was one of them away ends where it was really good to hear loads of new chants for the players who are playing really well. You know, people have obviously recognised that Weghorst, Lennon has been speaking about, Brownie, are playing really well, and wanting to make a chance for them, supporting the players, supporting the team. It was really good, yeah. It was really a proper, you know, old school, really good away end. And, you know, got a performance it deserved, I think, or certainly got a result it deserved anyway. And it's really good to have the team and the fans bouncing off each other like that. It's always a recipe for success, in my opinion. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a really good day out. And just as Natalie said, it felt just as good, I think, coming off that game, the point, as it had done the previous two, because then points mean so much more. when you've got wins under your belt, when you've had good results in the past, then you just keep things ticking over. So, yeah, really good day out.
Yeah, just keep things ticking over, like you said. I mean, after two wins, it could have been very easily gone down to Palace. Palace are a good team. Kind of have always troubled us over the years. I remember they used to be a bogey team, a big time when I was a kid. Yeah. But they're that kind of team with the really fast wingers that we just don't like. You know, you can picture the likes of Lawton in the past, Peters at the weekend, just not quite getting settled throughout a game. So I think we really did well to come away with a point, and we really nullified them, I'd say, in the second half compared to what we saw in the first. I mean, there was a cracking header from Veghorst, which was unlucky to be saved. But after the game, totally agreed, Tom. It was a brilliant day out and a lot of positivity. But going into the Leicester game, we'll talk about that now, Natalie. Do you feel after the previous week before, there was a newfound expectation, which maybe after the game has left many disappointed just with the result, but there did seem to be that there's a shift all of a sudden. We've come from a team where we've all gone onto the turf and thought, well, it's a write-off, you know, we'll just see what happens. So now we're thinking, let's get a win here tonight.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, football is, and I've said this before, football is a really emotive sport, and it elicits so much passion out of people. And I've never, ever had a problem with fans allowing, as long as it's not offensive and as long as it's not dangerous to people and it's above the law, I've never had a problem with fans being polar opposites or having quite extreme reactions to games. If you want to be absolutely devastated after a defeat and think that the world is over, the footballing world is over and that all is lost and we're going to get relegated, go for it. If you want to vent that way, do. If you want to be George Poole and every time we win, you think we're going to be running for the Champions League, which is what we have to put up with, listeners, every single time something goes right in our WhatsApp group, because he's on the hamster wheel of positivity. It's relentless. If you want to embrace that euphoria with a really good result, then do it. That's why you're a fan. And you can't have, I don't think, the positives that come with being a passionate football supporter without having those very extreme views. So I have no problem with A, the expectation of that Leicester game, or B, the reaction after it. And I think we need to prepare ourselves as fans to realise that this is going to be a really difficult season, and it is going to bring out the best and worst in us as fans. And it's going to test our patience levels. I was very disappointed last night, and I've still been in a bad mood all day today, just because it felt very deflating after the encouraged performance that we've had over the past week or so. And the fact that it wasn't a great performance as well, and everybody was off par, really annoyed me, because we can't afford to have an off day now. We're running out of games. It's like, you've lost the luxury of just having an under par performance. You've got to put your shift in every single game. And I'm still desperately want us to survive, because I think we can. I know the chances are slim. So when you know, 10 minutes away from getting a valuable point at home against Leicester and just ticking those points away, and the manner of that first goal as well, everybody just switched off and just watched Schmeichel hoof it right down midfield. Everyone's just like, oh, you know, maybe we should have scored that. Oh, look, it's in the back of the net. That irritated me. I was annoyed, George. I'm not going to lie. I was annoyed coming off. Maybe not as annoyed as Robbie was in our group, who, quite frankly, I thought we lost him for a minute then. I thought he was going to... I'm not going to screen share them, listeners, because it was quite abysmal. But needless to say, he sheepishly came into our group this morning and went, yeah, I accept I maybe overreacted a little bit last night, bless his heart. But how did you feel, Tom? Did you feel the same?
I think me and Rich were sort of at the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
I think had that been on the back of like two draws and a defeat or something like that, then it would have been more disappointing. But I think we've got ourselves into a much better position than we were even a couple of weeks ago. That's not to say that we can afford to drop points, or that we, that we're in a position where these winnable games at home are going to keep coming and coming, because we haven't got that many games left. But it didn't feel as devastating as it could have done. You know, that Watford game, I felt awful coming off that one. But yeah, for this last one, I'm thinking, well, you know, we're only a point behind Everton. We're two behind Leeds, three behind Brentford. Still only four behind Newcastle. Obviously, Everton now have got the game in hand on us, which is a weird feeling, but I think we have still got one on Leeds and two on Brentford.
Yeah,
so those advantages haven't disappeared. And I think, I think the reaction from Dyche and the players afterwards in the interviews was quite measured, and it's how I felt as well, really. It was, you know, it's been quite a week. Did I expect us to lose? I have to say no. Like, we're normally good at home against Leicester. If you look at the records prior to that game, I think we'd only lost three home games, which surprised me when I read that. Leicester had only won two away. Leicester had only got three clean sheets. So the stats all kind of pointed to us doing well. But, you know, we've had quite a busy few weeks of Saturday, Tuesday. We've not got a big squad to rotate. We had a couple of players missing that we could have done with, maybe, I think, Peters and Cork. You know, if they'd have been fit and not leggy, then they would have started. And they obviously played a good part in our recent resurgence. You've also got the, you know, the Cornet situation, which is quite a difficult one. I'm sure we'll come on to that. And whether or not you play him. So there was enough, when you look back at full time, there was enough kind of things that you can point out to say, well, maybe this is why the performance wasn't quite as good as they have been. Maybe this is why the result didn't quite go away. And even still, even with the performance level being off, you know, that could have easily been a draw. I think if Vardy had come back a few days later, it's probably finished 0-0, and we're not too dissatisfied. If Cornet, you know, that one that trundles just past the post, if that gets a slightly more fortuitous deflection, or if he's not, you know, half an inch offside in the first half, then we're talking about a different outcome. And, you know, a point wouldn't have made a momentous difference to the table, but it would have kept the field-goal factor going. But, like I say, it felt bad. I think probably partly because the goals came so late that it felt so bad. But if we're honest, it wasn't the best day. We didn't play that well. We got what we deserved, I think, really. But that's not to say that, you know, I don't have any hope now that we can't replicate the performances from prior, because what was missing for me before was the belief that we could turn these performances and this defensive display into results. And I think now we are showing that we can do that. So, you know, we're not going to win every game between now and the end of the season. We don't have to. We probably need to win maybe a third to half of them. I would say maybe five or six wins, really, to get safety. And last night hasn't made me think that we've got no chance of doing that now. So for me, yeah, a bit unlucky, bit of a shame. Probably deserved defeat. Let's park it and move on. Let's see if we can get anything out of the weekend. So yeah, I'm not feeling down hard at all, to be honest. It's not something
Can I just check with you though, Tom? Like, we say we need five or six wins now before the end of the season. This is a team that's won three games in 24. How the hell are we going to win six in the next, 15, 16 left? That's a big ask.
It is, for sure. There's only 13 left as well. So that's
Is it 13?
Think, yeah. The difference is, I think, it's not the team. Yeah, it's not the team that's won one of the previous 25. If you're a glass half empty kind of person, you could say that. If you're glass half full, it's the team that's won two of the last four and hasn't been outplayed in the other two. So, yeah, for me, what was lacking was the belief that we could go and win a game like Brighton away or Tottenham at home. And we're showing that we can. So I think we're going to struggle on Saturday. You know, I don't expect us to beat Chelsea. And if we get anything out of that game, I'll be delighted. But the Brentford game now is massive. And I would say prior to the Brighton victory and the performance, I would have said, I don't see there's a great chance of us going down there and winning. And now I think we could do that. I think we could go down and win there easily, especially with the week off in between. And when you look at how the landscape is now, with the points we've gained on Brentford in just a week, it's not implausible that we could finish above Brentford, Watford and Norwich now, I don't think. Whereas to me, it looked implausible before. So, I think that's what you've got to focus on, I think, for me, is to focus on how they've played. Probably since the turn of the year, maybe that's a better way of looking at it than what came prior in 2021, because I think everyone would agree, aside from probably Watford at home and maybe, you know, you could say maybe the last two games amid getting circumstances, the performance level has been pretty consistent and pretty good, and against some difficult opponents as well.
Yeah, definitely.
That week off's going to be massive as well, isn't it, Tom? I mean, you know, between the Chelsea and the Brentford game, because Natalie, I don't know about you, but to be honest, The team against Leicester wasn't the right team for me. You know,
no.
Peters, unfortunately, he just got injured. I thought Taylor performed well, but the other two changes, dropping Giroud, bringing Cornet in, dropping Court, bringing Westwood in. Maybe, I sense they were due to just the players getting leggy, you know, after so many games in such a tight period. I think, obviously, a week off between Chelsea and Brentford's going to help with that, because for me, Corney and Westwood don't start at the moment. For me, those changes were wrong on Tuesday night and probably helped us towards a loss in that game.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the Cork one's more excusable, I think. And Dyche was quite honest in his reflection and he came out and said, look, you know, it was a big ask to ask Jack to play a fourth game so quickly. And, you know, we know that Cork's legs aren't what they were. He's getting on a bit now, bless him. But I would have taken a half-fit Cork over Westwood last night. I thought Westwood was really poor. And we looked exposed again in midfield. And, you know, I'm not one of Brownhill's biggest fans. I don't think he's always the right player for that central midfield. But Westwood last night made Brownhill look like a superstar. I thought it was a really poor performance. But I do understand that. And I do think, you know, if Dyche was concerned about a midfield battle and he just thought that Cork's legs wouldn't last and it would, you know, we could suddenly find ourselves 3-0 down and the game's gone very early on, then I get that. Corney to me is inexcusable. I just think, I don't know what's happened to him. AFCON's broken him. He's come back and he just isn't the player. He desperately needs some game time. I guess I understand the argument that he felt like, you know, and I think a lot of people have said this, he felt like he could give him a little bit of spark. And you know, how do you get Corney back fit and back playing well without giving him minutes? But we don't have the luxury of that anymore. We don't have time. We're running out of games. We've got 13 games left. And the partnership between Vegos and Jay has been beautiful these past few games. They're creating chances. They're putting pressure on defenders. And I just think, for me, it was criminal that didn't start. I'm really annoyed at Dyche. I think that was a mistake.
I am also really annoyed. And I've been in a rubbish mood all day. That being said, for me, one of the worst bits of last night was unfortunately J-Rod for that first goal for Leicester, because bless him, he did so ever so well to close down their defenders, put pressure on, get them to make that pass back to the goalkeeper. He's done so well to run to the goalkeeper, but then he just doesn't do the basics, which is closing down the ball and just getting in the path of the ball. He runs to the side of Kasper Schmeichel, lets him kick the ball, and then from there upwards, yeah, okay, it's bad defending. But for me, it could have been stopped at the source. So, Tom, you know, just think about that first goal last night. Was, you know, am I being harsh on J-Rod here? You know, he's done well to track them down. But for me, he's got to put a foot in there, because not only could it have stopped the goal, it was in a cracking position. So if he takes the ball off Schmeichel there, we're in. We're 1-0 up, all being well. So for me, Tom, J-Rod's really, unfortunately, I love him to bits, but he's at fault for that first goal.
I think it's a bit harsh to say he's at fault for the goal, because, I mean, I agree with you. If you're going to run all that way, what's the point of then pulling out of blocking the clearance? You might as well slide in and see what happens. But, you know, I don't think that's realistically going to result in a goal. You probably, at best, you'll block it and it'll go for a throw-in or a goal kick. And I agree with you, he should have done that. But, you know, you're not expecting, you know, he's put the keeper under enough pressure that he's not had time to have a talk to or think about what he's going to do. And let's be fair, like, I mean, it's a great kick up the field, but they've been lucky that that's led to Vardy being onside. He's got onto it. And the big fault for me is, and this is something that frustrates me quite a lot, you know, obviously we're quite famous for defending deep, defending on the edge of our own box. And to me, what we do a lot in those kind of situations, and I think it's a great point that Natalie made earlier about we look worse with this when Westwood's in the team as well, is that we just let teams get the ball in those areas. So that ball comes forward and there's still a lot to do for Vardy. Now, he does fantastically well. His touch is brilliant. He takes it down, he lays it off. But when that ball bounces once, Tarkowski should be flying through the back of him and getting his head on that, for me. I don't understand why he stands off him and allows him to have that touch, because he only needs one great touch to kill it, lay it off, and then we're in disarray. Now, you know, we don't close Maddison down for the shot, fine. Because of obviously everyone's out of position, the way the ball's gone front to back so quickly for me. So I can understand how that happened. But that, for me, the point to stop that was there when that ball bounces the first time. Someone's just got to be on that. They can't be letting Vardy have the touch and turn and lay it off. And I think Tarkowski, even if he risks, you know, Vardy's between him and the ball, maybe he brings him down and gives away the free kick, that's preferable for me than letting him have the touch and see what happens. And that's what's cost us the goal. Now, like I say, there's a bit of luck involved in the fact that that ball gets to him so perfectly and he's onside. And you've got to applaud as well the skill involved. So, like I said, the touch is fantastic. The layout's really good. And Madison, when you saw him lining that up, he's got enough talent that you know that's going in the bottom corner and he's not going to give Pope a chance. And, you know, realistically, there's two or three where the Leicester players shouldn't have given Pope a chance, or maybe you wouldn't have expected him to have a chance, and he's pulled some absolutely fantastic saves out the back. You know, the two from Barnes are brilliant saves, and the one from Pereira as well. So, you know, maybe our luck's run out there as well. So I think it's a bit harsh to blame Rodriguez. For me, Tarkowski was what frustrated me the most about that goal. But as well, you know, you do that against most teams, and they're not going to take advantage of it in the way Leicester did. So you've got to hold your hand up there as well.
Does it temper your frustrations, Natalie, with the defence in that Leicester brought on Madison and Vardy, you know, two England internationals, cracking players, and we you know, had Ashley Barnes to bring on. You know, we're not blessed in that department. Does that temper your frustrations, or are you looking at, you know, the defence of that first goal, Conor Roberts for the second goal, and just thinking, you know, with despair at how we've let a solid point go down the gutter?
I don't know, to be honest. It's really difficult. I think Tom's really good at keeping us all in check with this when we talk about this offline. And he always gives us a really solid realism about this. And you've got to look and say, we're Burnley, and we have a squad that's not only made up of players that don't cost 30, 40 million, they cost 15, 60 million for our star players. Not only that, we ask those players to come to us at some of the smallest wages in the division, so they're not getting, I mean, okay, let's take a reality check here, they're still getting more than most of us earn in a lifetime, but compared to what they could earn somewhere else, it's very low, and they also have to take a pay cut if they get relegated. So we ask a lot of these players, so that limits the amount of players that can come to Burnley, and who, you know, we get grafters and we get people who want to play for a club, and that's always given me a great deal of pride in what we do here. So when Leicester can bring on those kind of substitutions that cost the money that they did, you think, well, you can't, that's just where we are in the food chain of the Premier League. We haven't got the luxury of buying those players. So we can't really sit there and think, you know, you can't begrudge another team being able to bring those substitutes on. It's happened to us all season. Managers have been able to bring substitutions on and change games and take it away from us, and we've got no options. That said, I think, as Tom rightly said, I think we've got players who could do better than they did do for those goals. So it does annoy me a little bit when they underperform to the extent they do. And you think, no, you know, Taki, you're better than that. You know, you were in the England setup not so long ago. Like, you can perform better. You can make better decisions. But I don't tend to get too carried away when sides that are much bigger than us can bring on multi-million pound players, because that's where they are. And if we, you know, if we had those players, you know, we wouldn't be Burnley. You know, we don't get those players because we can't afford them, and that's not where we are. At some point, maybe, but not right now.
And talking about multi-million pound players, I mean, you know, there's a team right above us in the league, Everton. Obviously, you know, I've spent a lot of money in the last 5 years, but they also improved in January. So, Tom, you know, after last night, I'm just looking at the table now, 25 games played, 21 points. Now, unfortunately, like you said earlier, it feels really strange to see a team above us who have a game in hand on us. I mean, that's not how the Premier League works these days, surely. Burnley have a game in hand on everyone, at least one, but not Everton, because Everton have got a game in hand now. They're a point above us. Are you still thinking, you know, they're well in the mix, or are they a team that you expect to sort of push on towards the end of the season?
Well, I think, if anything, you know, the last couple of weeks have told me that it's perhaps not wise just yet to say teams are in it or out of it, because I genuinely could not see a scenario in which it was not three from four. I thought it was going to be Newcastle, Norwich, Burnley and Watford. And I thought, as soon as Newcastle pull away, that's it. Well, goose is cooked. And obviously, I've said that at the time. And, you know, Pete, I've got to give John Robertson a mention. You know, he's been at me on Twitter the last couple of weeks, because he said to me a few weeks ago, you know, Brentford are catchable. And I said, 10 points. I said it on this podcast as well, 10 points. There's no way we're making up 10 points, because they've got 1 point from 7 games and we're still 10 points behind them. And then a week later, we're 3 points behind with two games in hand, and we're playing them in a couple of weeks. So I've got to hold my hand up there and say that, you know, maybe I was slightly too pessimistic. Now, obviously, I didn't see us getting 7 points in a week, but we've proved that we're capable of doing it. Everton, Leeds, Brentford, none of them are in good form. That's not to say they won't be between now and the end of the season. Leeds are a bit of an unknown now, new manager. I don't think he can do any worse than Bielsa have been doing the last couple of months, but I'm not sure he's the answer necessarily. Brentford, obviously, not going to make a change, and that might benefit us. And talking about Everton, I'm not sold on Lampard. You know, the jobs that he's had two jobs that he's been parachuted into, really, with good budgets and expected to be challenging at the top of the league. And it's a completely different scenario now. Now, as you said, he's got a good budget, but is he up for a relegation battle? I know they got robbed on Saturday, and he was right in what he said, that it was a shocking decision. And isn't it Sod's law that the ref who made, or the VAR ref that made that awful decision, then gets to come on the turf and completely guess every throwing in free kick because he hasn't got a clue what's going on? So, you know, I say this now while I'm whinging about the ref, but I did think the reaction was very strong from Lampard, and it struck me as a man who's under pressure, and perhaps he's not the best at keeping a calm head and dealing with that pressure. And you saw, by contrast, you know, the reaction of Sean Dyche yesterday. You know, if we lose a game, it's like, well, you know, on to the next one. If we draw a game, on to the next one. If we win, on to the next one. He's very calm. He's very cool. He looks like he's in control always. And, you know, he's been there, done that, and got the T-shirt. And I have to say, obviously, Everton have got a much more expensive squad than us. You'd probably say on paper they've got a better team. But I think, out of those four, I think I'm really happy with the manager that we've got.
Yeah, it's astonishing, really, to look at the table now and think a month ago, we were all absolutely certain it was either going to be Norwich, Watford, Burnley or Newcastle. And now I've just looked at the table and Newcastle have found themselves in 14th. They must be getting nosebleeds up there. But looking at the other teams down there, you've got Leeds, you've got Brentford, Newcastle. All us four could theoretically drop down into the bottom at one point or another. But I think, Natalie, for me, I'm feeling a lot more confident, you know, despite the loss to Leicester. I just think that Palace result, like Tom was saying earlier, just to go there, not put in the best performance, but just to get a draw and get a point out, it's really promising. And the fact, you know, as many pundits keep banging on about, and rightfully so, our defence has been brilliant this season. And it's tough to see teams with good defences go down. I think Tom mentioned this on Twitter the other day. Teams with good defences don't necessarily go down. It's teams with bad ones. And teams with bad ones, you're looking at the likes of Brentford, Leeds, but you're not looking at Burnley, are you?
No, and I think we had a guest on our previous show in for the Arsenal game, one of our regular friends, and he came to us with that very stat, and he said, if you look at the stats for relegated sides, it's very, very rare for sides that don't concede goals to actually get relegated. I've gone completely polar opposite to how down and dumped I was not so long ago. At this moment in time, I cannot see Burnley getting relegated. I just don't think it's going to be us. And that is a complete emotional reaction. I know that I'm letting my heart rule my head, maybe. And I know that I'm one of the worst fans in the world for letting that extreme emotion get to me. And I get angry when I come off turf and I tweet spout stuff. And I always, but that's just an emotional reaction to loving the team and to getting invested in what's happening. But at this moment in time, on the back of this last week's performance, the impact that Weghorst has had, I just don't see it. So I think it's going to be Watford, Norwich, Brentford. I think Brentford are going down. I think that's an absolute. I think it's definitely Norwich and Brentford. It's just whether or not we can keep our noses ahead of Watford. Leeds, I think, are in real trouble. Newcastle won't go down. Everton are definitely not going down. Leeds may very well go down just because they've lost all of their goal scorers. They're not scoring goals and they are leaking goals. Now, yes, they've changed their manager, but I think that was a nonsense decision because it wasn't for me Bielsa's tactics that were getting Leeds relegated. It's the massive injury problems that they've had this season, particularly to their goal scorers. Now, a new manager is going to come in. He's not going to change that because he's still got the same players available to him. So I think they're banging trouble. So for me, I think Brentford and Norwich are down, and I think it's one from Watford, Leeds and Burnley. And we don't concede goals. And I just think we've got enough about us that we can survive. So for me, that's my declaration today. Burnley will not be the side that goes down.
Oh, wow. I didn't expect that to come out on a Wednesday night. Oh, that's honestly, it's brightened my evening. I started out this morning such a foul mood, but it's going to end on a high. Unless, Tom, are you going to tell me that we're destined to go down rock bottom?
No!
No, to be fair, I've been saying for like the last couple of months that I thought I couldn't see us getting out of it. And the last couple of weeks, now I can. Now, that's not to say we definitely will. And I do think it's still in the balance a lot. You know, a couple of weeks here and there is going to make a big difference. And we've got Chelsea on Saturday. You don't expect us to get anything from that. Brentford away is huge because let's say we drop points in that game. Southampton have won tonight in the FA Cup, which means we'll not be playing them the week after, which means it's a two-week break. That might be good for us, but it is a two-week break. Maybe lose a bit of momentum. And then the game after that is Man City. So let's say in the next three games, we lose to Chelsea, we don't beat Brentford, we lose to Man City. All of a sudden, then, you know, if other teams get a win or two, that gap's back. You know, let's not forget, we're still in the relegation zone. So we've got to be realistic, you know. Now, to me, looking at our remaining fixtures, Chelsea and Man City, the only two games that I would say I don't expect us to get anything out of, or I don't feel we can get anything out of necessarily. But the rest, there's another 11 games, and I feel we could get points in all of them, whether that's one or three. So I would say it might be wise to kind of reassess after the Man City game. Let's see where we are, especially if teams around us have not been picking up wins and we are still within touching distance there. We're going to be back in a position where we've got games in hand. Then let's reassess there. So I'm not saying we definitely will get out of it. I think there's still a good chance we could go down. But compared to what I felt like a couple of weeks ago, I just did not see any way out for us at all. And now I can see it happening. So, yeah, I'm more positive than I was, for sure.
Tom, can I just say, I really hope it doesn't hurt for you later on tonight. You know, when you're pulling a piece of defence out your backside. I really hope it doesn't hurt.
I didn't think he was sat on the fence then. I thought that was quite an honest assessment. I thought he left himself quite vulnerable there. Did young Tom? God, you're a harsh horse. I'm not handing over the reins to you again, George. It's a good job I jumped on. Poor Tom would have been... See, this is... I look after the panel, Tom. This is what happens when you let the kids involved. Bloody George comes out.
Next time I'll just say, yeah, we're getting relegated and
exactly. No, because then you'll get criticised for being negative. You cannot win with George Poole, honestly. Listeners, we're not lying. We're not making this up. What, at the end of the season, as an end of season special, I'm going to screenshot some of the chats that we've had. George sends us all into it drives poor Rich Steele up the wall. It's like, oh, we don't know where we are with him. He goes from being like the most negative Harry on the panel to the most relentless positivity hamster you've ever seen. And then just bullies us all. I'm going to tell your dad on you.
Tom, I'm just going to make you aware that seeing as I'm the host on this Zoom call, I can remove attendees anytime. And that goes for you too, Romley.
I can remove you from the team, George. So trumped.
Well, we need to wrap up this podcast now, Natalie. We don't want to be going down any rabbit holes like that. But Natalie, before we do wrap up, obviously you didn't get your say on the first few games we covered. Is there anything else you'd like to report or say before we go off?
No, we're all good. We're all good. I should listen back to the first half an hour. I'm sorry I'm late. I was late. But yeah, no, thanks for covering for us, guys. But yeah, let's. I'm actually going to say we're gonna win away at Chelsea. There we go. We're not at home, aren't we? We're going to win at Chelsea at Saturday. So that's what I'm going to leave you with, a victory.
Yeah, and if we do get a victory, we thanks you now, Natalie. That's what I'm saying.
Take full credit. Yeah. Full credit.
No, yeah, I certainly agree. And it wouldn't be anything to do with this fire sale of Chelsea that you've rightfully mentioned in our chat. I mean, that's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on. But, God, I guess I'll have wrapping up duties here. Oh, gosh, I've always been rubbish at wrapping paper. But, no, thanks. Thank you, listeners, for everything. And thank you for listening in. And also, may I just say, before we do go off, is for anyone who did get involved with a photo project that I was doing down at Palace for the Claridge Trust, thank you. You know, brilliant of you to get involved. And I'll be doing the same at Brentford. Now, I know Rich Steele's already been messaging me today saying, can you get a picture of me, please, at Brentford? They look really nice. So, Richard, yes, I'll get a photo of you. But, you know, if there's a queue, you'll have to go to the back of it. But, no, thanks, listeners, for listening in, as always. And thanks to George Gaskell for providing our brilliant music. So now that I've just sellotaped the wrapping paper around this brilliant podcast, I'll leave you be for the evening. So thanks, listeners, and we'll see you next time on the No Nay Never podcast.